This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine for a second that you're building this revolutionary tech product. I mean, you've got top-of-the-line specs, flawless code, a beautiful user interface. You are totally geared up for a global launch.
Right, the classic Silicon Valley dream.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then, right before shipping, you hit an absolute brick wall. You find out you're completely locked out of a $20 billion a quarter market. And it's not because your tech has a bug or because of some competitor's feature set. You're locked out simply because your product is carrying the wrong passport.
Yeah, and that just forces a complete rethinking of how tech companies scale today. I mean, we are rapidly moving away from this old assumption that, you know, a good product just naturally crosses borders.
Totally. And that brings us to today's deep dive. We are unpacking a fundamental shift happening right now in the global tech landscape, which is the rapid rise of sovereign AI.
It's fascinating, right? Because the conversation used to be solely about, you know, which AI is the smartest, who has the highest benchmark scores.
Right. But now it's about how countries are aggressively drawing borders and just walling off their own AI ecosystems entirely.
Yeah. The era of AI functioning as this borderless global utility, that is effectively over. Governments are stepping in, and the ramifications for global supply chains, corporate compliance, and honestly, even your own software subscriptions are going to be substantial.
So to navigate all of this, today's deep dive is powered by a recent AI Daily briefing report. And we also have some incredibly insightful commentary provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker. He really connects the raw technological advancements to the actual legal tripwires that companies are about to step on.
His perspective is super vital here. I mean, we often look at tech in a vacuum, right? Just focusing on those benchmark scores. But lawyer Kyungjin Kim's analysis really bridges that gap between the engineering lab and the incredibly harsh reality of international trade law.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to explore how Japan, South Korea, and China are all aggressively moving to ensure they just don't have to rely on foreign computing power or foreign AI models.
Which is a massive pivot for the industry.
It really is. We'll look at what that means for global supply chains and the legal hurdles companies face. But I think to grasp why governments are suddenly drawing borders around AI, we first have to understand the sheer scale of the technology that's driving this panic in the first place.
Oh, for sure. You really cannot understand the policy shift without understanding the underlying hardware boom that's forcing it. Like, governments are sitting there watching the private sector hoard resources, and they are reacting to that.
Right, and we see that hoarding so clearly with TSMC, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. I mean, they manufacture the chips for NVIDIA and AMD, effectively sitting at the very top of the AI semiconductor supply chain.
The absolute top.
Yeah. And they just released their second quarter earnings, and revenue hit exactly $40.2 billion.
And look, that $40.2 billion figure is mathematically significant, you know, because it perfectly touched the absolute top end of their previous guidance.
Wow.
Yeah, like in manufacturing, especially semiconductor fabrication, which requires years of lead time, hitting the absolute ceiling of your forecast means your factories are running at maximum capacity. Your buyers are taking every single unit you can produce.
And those buyers are the hyperscalers, right? Like the massive cloud providers, Amazon, Microsoft, Google.
Exactly.
And the fact that TSMC pushed their Q3 guidance even higher, forecasting up to $45.8 billion, that just tells us those cloud providers are not slowing down one bit.
Right. It proves that the hyperscaler demand for AI chips is showing zero signs of a plateau. The foundational infrastructure build-out is still accelerating. So for you, the listener, whether you hold tech stocks or you just pay for cloud storage, this means a massive amount of global capital is still just being locked into physical data centers.
Yeah. So while the physical hardware is booming, the software running on it is really changing shape. Over in the U.S., Thinking Machines Lab just released a new model called Inkling.
Oh, yeah. Inkling is a big deal.
It is. And it's notable because they released it under an Apache 2.0 license.
Which is huge.
Right. For those unfamiliar, an Apache 2.0 license is a massive deal for the business world because it allows for commercial use without paying hefty licensing fees.
Yeah. No API tolls every time you use it.
Exactly. It's also an open weight model, meaning developers can literally download the actual trained brain of the AI. They aren't just accessing it through some paid gateway. But the scale of Inkling is what makes it super unique. It has 975 billion parameters.
Which is wild because running a model with nearly a trillion parameters normally requires just a prohibitive amount of compute power.
Oh, absolutely.
But Inkling uses this specific architecture called a mixture of experts, or MoE, to make it manageable. Out of those 975 billion parameters, only 41 billion are active at any one time.
Let me just visualize that mixture of experts structure for a second because it can get dense.
Go for it.
Think of that 975 billion parameter model as this sprawling, massive university library, right?
Sure.
It contains information on literally everything in human history.
Okay, I'm with you.
Now, if you walk in with a highly specific question about, say, 14th century French poetry, you don't grab a megaphone and ask every single librarian in the entire building to help you at once.
Right, that would waste an immense amount of time and energy, which honestly is essentially what older, dense AI models do. They light up the entire neural network for every single prompt.
Exactly. Instead, with this MoE architecture, you just go to this specific librarian who specializes in 14th century French poetry. That specialized librarian represents the 41 billion active parameters.
That's a great way to look at it.
Right. You get the benefit of the massive knowledge base of the whole library, but you only pay the computational cost of consulting the specific experts needed for your specific question.
Yeah, the routing mechanism inside the model acts like the front desk, directing your query instantly. And the results are impressive. The Independent Evaluator artificial analysis actually ranked Inkling as the number one US open weight model. Yeah, it scored an IQ 41, beating NVIDIA's Nemotron 3 Ultra and Gemma 431B. But beyond raw intelligence, the operational efficiency is what really matters for real-world deployment.
Well, yeah, because it has a 1 million token context window. And a context window is basically the AI's short-term memory for a single conversation. A million tokens means you could, like, feed it a dozen entire books at once, and it wouldn't forget the first chapter by the time it reaches the last one.
And it processes that massive amount of text so efficiently. When they evaluated it on complex agent capabilities, Inkling used an average of only 25,000 output tokens to solve tasks.
Which is pretty low, right?
Extremely low. Competitors like GLM 5.2 required 43,000 tokens for the exact same tasks. It gets to the answer much more directly, which translates directly to cost savings. Like at a 64K context baseline, which is standard medium-length document analysis, it costs just $1.87 per million input tokens.
That's incredibly cheap. And the combination of it being cheap, highly intelligent, and an open license completely changes how professionals can actually use it. Lawyer Kunjin Kim provided commentary pointing out a very specific use case that kind of alters the whole privacy landscape.
Oh, this is a great point.
Because Inkling accepts native audio and operates under that open license, lawyers, doctors, and businesses can now process highly sensitive transcripts locally.
Right, because traditionally, if a law firm wanted top-tier AI transcription or analysis of, say, a sensitive client meeting, they had to send that audio file via an API to an external server.
Handing it over to someone else.
Exactly. They were handing over sensitive data to a third party. Now, you can download a model like Inkling and just run it on an internal server. The data never literally leaves the building.
I could totally see how that is a game changer for corporate compliance. You get cloud-level AI intelligence without the cloud-level data vulnerability.
Definitely. Though, lawyer Kinjin Kim did point out a crucial technical hurdle for companies wanting to do this.
Oh, what's that?
Well, even though only 41 billion parameters are active during a query, you still have to load all 975 billion mathematical weights into your system's memory to run it.
Oh, right, because the whole library still has to exist in the building.
Precisely. To do that on a single standard commercial GPU, businesses will actually need to rely on low-bit quantized versions of the model.
Okay, so for those listening, quantization is basically a compression technique, right?
Yeah.
You're shrinking the mathematical precision of the model so it can physically fit onto a smaller memory chip, hopefully without losing too much intelligence.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Businesses will need to carefully test the speed and accuracy of those compressed versions before committing. But, you know, the overarching capability to keep data entirely in-house is really what gives governments the leverage they need to build their own ecosystems. Like, if a local company can run a powerful AI locally, a nation-state certainly can.
Right. Which brings us to the core of this whole sovereign AI shift. We are witnessing the massive nationalization of compute. Governments realize they just don't have to rely on foreign servers anymore.
Not at all.
And Japan is making an undeniable move here. They are building a 140 megawatt AI factory funded by a 387.3 billion yen government subsidy, which translates to about $2.4 billion.
And that level of direct state investment into raw infrastructure, that changes the market dynamics entirely. The factory is being built by an NVIDIA-backed consortium called Noitra, and it's going to house 27,500 Rubin GPUs. I mean, they are laying down the physical bedrock for sovereign capability.
And they have a very targeted goal with all this hardware, physical AI. They're focusing heavily on robotics, digital twins, and industrial automation. And, you know, considering Japan's demographic situation with a rapidly aging workforce, automating physical labor isn't just some cool tech upgrade. It is a strict economic necessity.
Yeah, and their stated goal from their March AI robot strategy really reflects that urgency. By 2040, Japan intends to capture over 30% of the global AI robot market, which is an industry projected to be worth $133 billion.
Wow. But the way they're using that $2.4 billion subsidy is the real sovereign AI twist here. The Japanese government is using state funds to train foundational models, and then they plan to just share those pre-trained weights with local Japanese developers.
Which is brilliant, because they are using taxpayer money to overcome the massive bottlenecks of power, land, and chip procurement that startups face. The state secures the compute, trains the base model, and just hands that raw material to their private sector.
It totally lowers the barrier to entry for local startups.
Exactly, ensuring the next generation of Japanese tech isn't built on rented foreign infrastructure.
Now, we see a slightly different approach to a very similar goal over in South Korea. The Ministry of Science and ICT there announced an initiative called AI for Everyone.
Yeah, this one is ambitious.
It is. They plan to launch a free, unlimited generative AI service by the end of the year. The ultimate goal is one AI agent per citizen by 2027.
And to support that, companies like SK, GS, and Nover are investing heavily in AI data centers, tallying up to something like 550 trillion won. But there is a very significant policy condition attached to this public infrastructure project.
Yeah, and this is where it gets complicated. To participate in this government project, companies must use at least 50% Korean-made AI models.
Right.
I gotta say, I have a lot of trouble wrapping my head around the logistics of this requirement. Like, how does a regulator even measure 50% Korean?
It's extremely tricky.
Right. If a developer in Seoul takes an American open weight model, like Inkling, and fine-tunes it on Korean servers using Korean data, is that a Korean model?
Who knows?
And how is that 50% calculated in practice? Are we measuring by the number of tokens processed, the amount of compute power used, or like the number of API calls routed to it?
I mean, your confusion is totally warranted here. And lawyer Kyung Shin Kim actually zeroed in on this exact problem in his commentary.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He pointed out that while Japan and Korea are using different methods, they are broadcasting the exact same geopolitical message. We will not borrow compute and models from others.
It's a really strong political statement, but practically it sounds like an auditing nightmare.
It's a complete legal minefield. Lawyer Kyungjin Kim highlighted that if the criteria for what constitutes a Korean model, or exactly how that 50% ratio is mathematically calculated, if that isn't strictly defined in the contract, disputes are completely inevitable.
Oh, of course.
When it comes time for the government to settle payments or issue sanctions, vague metrics like token count versus API calls will lead to massive litigation.
Definitely. And while Japan and Korea are trying to incentivize these local ecosystems through subsidies and procurement rules, China is taking a much harder stance. Mm-hmm. They're enforcing their borders through hard, unavoidable regulation.
Yeah, China is demonstrating what a fully walled AI garden actually looks like, and it is completely reshaping how American tech giants have to operate globally.
Take Apple, for instance. Apple Intelligence finally received regulatory approval in China. But to get that approval, Apple had to fundamentally break their usual strategy of vertical integration.
Which they hate doing.
They do. They had to integrate Alibaba's Qwen model for text and image generation on Chinese devices.
Because the conditions for market entry were explicit. Apple just could not solely rely on its proprietary models. They had to overlay a locally approved model.
And the scale of China's internal AI development is just vast. At the World AI Conference, WAIC, in Shanghai, Huawei showcased its Atlas 950 SuperPod.
That thing is a beast.
Right. A SuperPod is essentially a cluster of thousands of AI chips networked together to act as a single giant brain. It provides the immense localized computing power needed to train massive models without relying on any foreign tech.
Right.
And alongside the hardware, China's State Administration for Market Regulation just approved 7 new national standards for AI, robots, and smart factories.
And you have to realize, those standards act as invisible borders. They dictate the safety protocols, the testing metrics, and the data handling requirements. If your software doesn't perfectly align with those specific standards, you literally cannot operate in the country.
Which brings up a vital takeaway from lawyer Kung Jin Kim on this shift. For years, the legal battleground in tech was focused almost entirely on data flow.
Right, data localization.
Exactly. Yeah. The primary regulatory hurdle was always, where is the user's data physically going?
Companies spent the last decade building localized data centers just to comply with things like Europe's GDPR or China's previous data laws, making sure data stayed within national borders, even while they were still using a global software model.
But lawyer Kung Jin Kim points out that the conversation has dramatically shifted from data flow to model nationality. Regulators aren't just asking where the data lives anymore. They're asking whose model is processing it.
Yes.
The nationality of the AI itself now determines your market entry.
And miscalculating that shift carries a staggering cost. Lawyer Kung Jin Kim observed that Apple delayed implementing this dual-structure architecture.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they didn't build their operating system from day one to easily swap in a local model like Alibaba's Qwen for the Chinese market while using their own model everywhere else globally.
Wow.
And that architectural delay, it cost them 2 whole years of being locked out of the generative AI market in China.
2 years. In a market where they generate over $20 billion a quarter.
It's an expensive lesson.
It really shows you can't just slap a new model into an operating system as an afterthought. Building a global tech product today is starting to look like manufacturing a household appliance for the global market.
What do you mean?
Well, imagine designing what you think is the perfect toaster, right? But you realize halfway through manufacturing that every single country requires a completely different voltage, a different plug shape, and a safety inspector who uses a totally different testing manual.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Thanks. If you manufacture 10 million identical toasters, assuming one size fits all, they're all going to get seized at the border.
That perfectly illustrates the compliance burden. Software architecture must now be designed with interchangeable plugs. You need the flexibility to route prompts to an Alibaba model in Shanghai, or ensure 50% of your processing hits a Korean model in Seoul, all without breaking the core functionality of your application.
And lawyer Kung Jin Kim offers a stark warning for any company navigating these initiatives. Whether dealing with China's strict local mandates or South Korea's vague 50% quota, companies must secure all definitions in writing before applying for government projects.
It's not negotiable.
He noted that clarifying these definitions in writing before upcoming deadlines, like the August 11th deadline for the Korean project, is really the only way to avoid debilitating audits and settlement disputes later on.
The compliance teams just have to be involved in the core engineering design from the very beginning now. We are moving entirely away from a unified global internet infrastructure.
And that brings us to the overarching reality of today's deep dive. AI is just no longer a borderless endeavor.
It's really not.
We're seeing Japan pour billions into NVIDIA GPUs to build a sovereign robotics ecosystem. We're seeing South Korea demand high percentages of local tech for public projects. We're seeing China force companies like Apple to integrate local models. Sovereign AI is fundamentally reshaping the geopolitical landscape of technology.
The borders are drawn, the national standards are set, and honestly, the toll booths are actively being constructed right now.
So for you listening, whether you're an entrepreneur building a startup, an investor analyzing tech portfolios, or a developer picking an open weight model to build on, you have to look beyond the benchmark scores.
Absolutely.
I mean, an IQ of 41 on a test is impressive, but it's completely irrelevant if you cannot legally deploy the model in your target market. You must evaluate an AI model's geopolitical footprint and its legal compliance just as rigorously as its processing speed.
The raw capability of the technology is only half the equation now. The passport of the model is the deciding factor for commercial success.
So true. I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder, building on this entire concept of sovereign AI. We are watching every country successfully build its own isolated, legally distinct AI ecosystem.
Yeah.
These ecosystems will be trained exclusively on local data, shaped by local cultural values, and restricted by local government mandates. If this continues, do we lose the concept of a unified global internet entirely?
It's a huge question. It forces us to question what a shared digital reality even looks like moving forward.
Are we stepping into an era of a splinter net of AI? Imagine a future where historical facts, logical deductions, and fundamental truths vary entirely depending on which country's AI you happen to be asking. You might build the perfect tech product, but if it carries the wrong passport, it doesn't just get blocked at a physical border anymore. The AI models themselves might fundamentally disagree on what the border even is or what reality looks like on the other side.
That's a wild thought to leave on.
It really is. Thanks for diving deep with us today.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.